Hello and welcome to the first Tribcast podcast of the new year. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hello, Elise. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott from KUT News and the Tribune.
Hello.
Today we're talking about what's going to happen.
Ben sounds mad.
Who welcome,
mad
Ben.
At, Ben?
He's still mad from last year.
Yes.
If I catch those jerks in 2010, I tell you. 2011 will be my victory.
I'm going to make mincemeat of them.
Our topics today are the coming legislative session starting next Tuesday. I can't believe it's already here. And the speaker's race, the election that will happen on the first day of the session. The interest groups that are already posturing to make sure they are included in the next budget, despite a revenue estimate, our third topic that's coming out that probably won't look too rosy.
So. Oh, it's going to suck.
Yeah, it's going to stink. Yeah. It's going to be all in ready.
It's
going to both stink and suck.
Right.
It's going to be really bad.
Well, let's start with kind of mopping up on the
I do. Chaos is good for my must-read business.
That's right.
Let's talk with the speaker's race and what's going to happen in that Republican caucus the day before the election.
Yeah,
Ross
gonna,
and Evan?
We're going to get a pre-speaker's race here. You know, we get this Monday thing, which is basically Warren Chisholm started this officially, asking Larry Taylor and the Republican caucus to have a speaker preference vote before the session. And they were originally, you know, there were some dates kicked around, but they landed on Monday. They're going to do
this. What is a speaker preference?
They're going to go into the caucus and say, you know, the Republican caucus's preference is
non-binding
or X, right?
Right. So it's like a popularity contest.
It's non-binding, which is sort of interesting. If this was Washington, they would go in and vote and then come out and vote as a block, and we'd have 100 votes for whoever was chosen in that caucus.
But you can't do that.
Of course, Larry Taylor does remind us that they can't even take this preference vote without an initial vote to even take the vote.
So you have to vote to vote.
They have to have two-thirds approval to even take a speaker's preference.
Is there any
vote.
Doubt that they're going to get the two-thirds?
There's always doubt with these guys. I mean, it's so foggy, and it's one of those things where all of the members are going to walk into this meeting, no matter how much they know about the rules and the politics, they're going to walk into this going, now what are we doing and why are we doing it? Why are we, you know, the worst thing for politicians is to vote when it's unnecessary. Why am I planting a flag on a hill I don't want to fight
on? But isn't that uncertainty good, Ben, for Strauss? If the Republicans can't come together inside the caucus room to decide whether to come together inside the caucus room,
right,
and therefore the only vote that's conducted is out in the open, it's good for Strauss.
Yes, and it's kind of like in 2007 where you had the vote in the Craddock-Pitts race whether or not to allow it to be a secret ballot.
Right.
So that vote...
And that was tantamount to the vote for Speaker.
Right, because right. If you could get to secret ballot, then the assumption was that more Republicans would be willing to split off and vote for Pitts. Right. You couldn't get to the secret ballot, and that was it. I mean, in fact, after the secret ballot vote ended, Pitts walked across the aisle and shook Craddock's hand, and it was all over.
Because he knew.
He just pulled. Yeah, he just pulled.
Well, the theory was that nobody would vote against Craddock in the open.
Do you think Paxton has the same view, that nobody will vote for Strauss?
I don't see the votes for either Paxton or Chisholm here. I mean, neither one of those guys has showed that he has enough strength, even in the caucus, not to mention the full House, even in the caucus, to beat Strauss. And Strauss, you know, has very carefully said, you know, I'm not against a caucus vote.
Well, of course he's not, because he knows he'll win it.
Right. Right.
Easy position for him to take.
So, you know, the issue here is whether they vote in caucus. Why would they vote in caucus? You know, what's the purpose of this? If you're going to turn around and vote for Strauss on Tuesday when the official vote is taken on the floor of the House. It's an interesting thing. And we've got these outside groups playing for the first time. So we've got at least three groups, I think, saying that they're going to weight their
Eagle Forum. Americans right. for Prosperity.
Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. And saying that they're going to take their post-session ratings of members and the speaker vote will have extra weight, which is kind of interesting if you're a Democrat. Now, these three conservative groups are going to give me extra points on my test if I vote against Strauss.
Motivation to vote against Strauss.
So I could vote against Strauss and then turn around and vote against tort reform and maybe, you know, mitigate my rating and not have to face a bad rating in the next election cycle. It's a mess. It's a big fuzzy mess.
I think what is most interesting here is that unless the Paxton and Chisholm forces have some secret plan that they've been saving to reveal until the end, that the math just, as you say, done work. I mean, are we going to walk into a vote that, and totally unbeknownst to us, there are 45 Republicans who have not said that they're planning to vote for Paxton who are going to show their hands at the last minute?
The big sort of symbolic end to the excitement of the whatever this was, I mean, Speaker's race, if you will, it hasn't been much compared to 09 and 07, I think, was Beverly Woolley. Beverly Woolley was a Craddock County Affairs chair. She was not a chairman under Strauss in 2009.
She was Craddock's chair.
Yeah, oh, Callender's, I'm sorry. Right. Yeah, and so she was a big deal and a big get for Strauss. When she came out publicly, and she was on the fence for a while privately, from what I'm told from sources, and when she came out publicly before Christmas and said, I'm with Strauss, a lot of folks pretty much assumed the race was over.
Does that give, then, Craddock loyalists who were presumably assumed to be with not Strauss, whoever not Strauss was, in retaliation for Strauss deposing Craddock.
Right.
Does that then give Craddock loyalists cover to support Strauss?
Yeah, Sid Miller is now out and supporting
Strauss. a lot of them were already with Strauss, but you know, I mean, it does. I mean, it's sort of that, you know, what some might have assumed was a block against Strauss is not a block at all. In fact, it's split. And, you know, this is a whole different game. It's not a repeat of the 2009 race. You know, for this thing to work, I think, you know, we're doing the autopsy before the thing's dead. But for Paxton's or for Chisholm's candidacy to work, you had to have kind of a replay of the 2009 race. And the people who lost power and or were offended by that result would have to come back and say, we're taking it back. I don't think they have the numbers.
Well, and obviously the key thing in 2009 was you had almost every single Democrat willing to vote for whoever not Craddock was. How many Democrats are going to vote for whoever not Strauss is?
Yeah, you know, there are, a lot of the Democrats are really unhappy.
None. Right.
A lot of the Democrats are really unhappy with Strauss. They don't think they got, you know, what they thought they were going to get or whatever it was.
And but you have a theory about what they should do.
I do have a theory, but so
let's hear it.
Let me finish this one. A lot of the Democrats are unhappy with Strauss until you present an alternative who's more conservative, and then they're going, oh, we're not going to do that. And, and I think when you step up with a, you know, maybe a Chisholm could work. Maybe. I think when you step up with the Paxton, that just doesn't work for the Democrats.
How could Chisholm be more attractive to Strauss, to the Democrats, pardon me, than Strauss?
Because he's got a history of playing with people on both sides and playing, you know, dealing mostly fairly with people on both sides. Now, he fouled that some when he was appropriations chair.
Strauss hasn't had a history of dealing fairly with both sides?
Strauss has, but some of the Democrats feel like they didn't get the deal they thought they were going to get when
voter ID was actually allowed to come up.
Any Democrat who thinks they're going to get a better deal with Chisholm than Strauss is smoking something.
Right.
Well, it may be that, you know, these are all not general politics. These are specific politics. It may be, Evan, if you vote for me, you might be a chairman. And a Democrat would go for that. You know, I mean, you know, it's all in particular. If you think you're going to get a better personal deal under one guy than under the other guy.
All right, but say, this is, I love this, my favorite Ross theory of the morning. Well, it's still a few hours.
So if you're the Democrats and the Republicans are having this fight, and there's no reason for you to participate in the Republicans' fight, so why don't the Democrats go to Strauss and say, you know, we're going to sit out the first vote or the first ballot on Tuesday, and let you Republicans settle this thing. And if you don't need our votes, Mr. Strauss, then you'll be fine.
The caucus vote becomes, in effect,
The Speaker's vote. And we'll just sit this thing out, and we'll get our high ratings from Texans for Fiscal Responsibility and the Eagle Forum and all of that, and you can go hang. Or you can deal with us now.
This is leverage a little early on,
Everybody's talking about the Republicans. Everybody's talking about the Republican caucus. The Democrats are getting shut out. It's like, you know, they've only got 49 members. They can just go in and say, you know, since you don't need us, we're just going to hang out here in the back row.
So if you subtract 49 from 150, you get 101. Of the 101, can Strauss get to a majority?
Got to get to 52.
If the Democrats sit out.
Right.
Then Strauss needs to get 76 of 101, or he needs to get 52 of 101.
Majority of those voting.
51, actually. It'd be 51. Right.
So he doesn't vote.
He can vote for himself?
Sure.
Didn't Craddock not vote for himself?
Well, you know, there's a tradition of it, but, you know, if you need the vote.
So basically, let's just say,
I'm the 51st voter, I'm voting.
Let's just say plus or minus, maybe he'll vote for somebody else.
Yeah, right.
Let's just say plus or minus 50 he needs. Can he get to 50?
I think he can, but it puts the Democrats in a position where it's, you know, don't forget us.
Well, if Paxton has 30 that we know of, let's just say, for argument's sake.
He doesn't have 30, but
let's
okay.
Just
for the sake of argument. I'm not good at math, but he doesn't have 30.
Let's just say.
If
Paxton had 30, Strauss is looking at having to get to 50, going, you know, this goes wrong, that goes wrong. Linda Harper Brown wakes up on the wrong side of the Mercedes. Bing, you know.
Nobody wants to give up 49 votes.
I
think the 49 votes could raise their hand and put themselves in a bargaining
position. Elise has that let's move on on her face. But so I want to actually call for
just
a vote.
She's yawning.
I want to call for an open ballot of the Tribcast caucus. Okay?
Right.
Who's going to be the next speaker, Elise?
Oh, Joe Strauss.
Who's going to be the next speaker, Ross? Who's going to be the next speaker, Ben?
Strauss.
I say Strauss. Todd, who's going to be the next speaker?
Strauss gives us
the Zeppo Marx of the Tribcast, who does not speak.
Todd has no mic.
He honked his horn.
That's right.
And he said, Strauss!
This tape will self-destruct five minutes after the vote in the House.
All right.
Harpo. Todd just told me it's not Zeppo, it's Harpo. Sorry, Todd. The Marx brothers are certainly before your time, but they're also before mine.
All right, so we all think
Strauss.
Yeah, we all think Strauss, and we'll be watching all day on Monday.
I can't wait to see some of the more liberal Democrats get that C rating from the Eagle Forum.
Because what I am curious to see on Tuesday is whether anybody in the House, Democrat or Republican, feels strongly enough about this issue to vote against Strauss. If as we assume here, Strauss is going to win this thing, is he going to win on a vote of acclamation, or are there going to be some people who want to put a flag on the hill and say, you know, these 25, 26 members, 30 members, whatever it is, are voting against. You know, the Dirty 30 started this way, voting against Gus Mutcher.
I would argue the Tea Party is not going to let some of these people do a vote of acclamation. They're going to have to plant that flag and say, mm-hmm. I'm a no vote, because essentially they believe, and maybe correctly so, they were elected.
Right.
To say to, no. To oh, especially no. The Van Taylors.
So the interesting thing there, if we do get a split in the House there, will be that we'll get groups. You know, we had the Craddock D's back in the day, and we had the Dirty 30 way back in the day. And, you know, you'll get this, you know, if you have a speaker vote and it's not by acclamation and there's a significant block, that becomes a block to watch. So we've got the Democratic block that we watch. And then we begin to divide the Republicans and say, okay, these 26
what are you gonna
voted
call them?
Against Strauss. We have to think of a name. We'll have a contest.
I think Senator Patrick came up with a name.
The Tea Party Caucus. Right. But if you believe that, then the Tea Party Caucus members would all be voting against Strauss, and I'm not convinced they're all going to vote against Strauss.
I'm certain
they're
not.
For instance, Rob Eisler is a member of the Tea Party Caucus.
Right, I'm certain they're not all going to vote against Strauss.
Right. All right, let's stay with this idea of groups and talk a little bit about the interest groups that are doing a little posturing before session starts.
Well, you know, everyone wants to get their 2 cents in before we find out that that's all we have in the bank.
two cents. Ben made a joke.
Thank you. Well played. Did you like that? Dun, dun, dun.
Make sure that's in the damn 2011 best of.
Okay. All right. Ding. I'll write that down.
Ding. Right. So we have groups like Texas Forward, which is a moderate group saying, listen, if you're gonna cut the budget, let's not cut all 20 gazillion dollars out. Let's use all the
moderate.
Moderate to liberal, maybe?
Yeah, moderate to liberal.
Liberal to
moderate? Yes, moderate to liberal. They're saying, look, empty the rainy day fund. If you're going to don't cut everything completely, maybe even possibly look at a small revenue source to get us through the next 2 years and then worry about what happens 2 years later, you know, down the road. Just don't slash and burn, in other words. You also have my favorite Strange Bedfellows press conference of the session coming up, which is the ACLU and the Texas Association of Business talking about how we cannot have Arizona-style immigration bills floating through the state legislature.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be really interesting to see all these groups. There's also a border sheriffs are going to be involved as well, you know, who are going to also probably talk about, hey, you can't cut the budget to hurt us if you actually want security. Right. And so it's just interesting to see all these groups coming out, kind of throwing in their hat in the ring and saying, look, yeah, sure, we got to make cuts, but you don't really mean cut this, because if you cut this, the sky will turn red and there will be frogs and, you know.
Straight out of Exodus.
What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. It's in Old Testament. Yeah.
Oh, my frogs, God. Right. Well, yeah, that's not my testament. That's great.
Old Testament is your testament.
No. I don't have a testament. I'm just, what the hell's he talking about frogs? That's great.
Should I have said locusts?
Yes.
This is the thing. This is like your New Year's resolution to diet. You know, I'm going to diet. I'm going to lose weight. Oh, I'm not going to stop eating that. I mean, that's exactly how budgets work. You come in, you say, I want to cut the budget. We need to trim this thing down. And you're not going to cut that. And we're going to have a whole list of these things for months. You know, I didn't mean to cut that part of Medicaid, and I didn't want you to cut that part of public education. And
I didn't want you to shut down the largest employer in my county because of a budget cut.
Right.
Well, you know what? There aren't enough dollars in the budget to be cut. Nope. If that's the case. You know, if everyone's going to do one of these, you know, it's the old, what's that old line from the U.S. Senate? Richard Russell, maybe, the senator from Georgia, don't tax me, don't tax you, don't tax me, tax that guy behind the tree.
Right.
There's
right.
a certain version of that with cutting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? I won't cut your stuff, and we shouldn't cut my stuff. We'll cut his stuff. That, there aren't enough hisses to go
around. This
is
that country music lyric, right? Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
Garnet Coleman is floating this proposal to add a temporary 1 cent sales tax increase.
Which is another strange bedfellow. The Center for Public Policy Priorities, a liberal state policy think tank, also is kind of behind this idea. And they are never behind consumption taxes. They find them regressive.
Right.
Well, they are aggressive.
Right.
But,
it is a temporary
Arizona
revenue.
Did this, yeah. Right? Well, you know, when Arizona got in the ditch, they sold a bunch of buildings and leased them back, including the one where the House meets and the one where the Senate meets. Kind of interesting.
Right.
They did
a hell
temporary,
of a security deposit you have to leave for that.
Temporary sales tax.
Right.
You know, Texas, we've done temporary taxes for local projects and things like that, you know, local tax districts.
Temporary gas tax is right. something. That hasn't a gas tax been floated again recently?
Yeah, gas tax increase or vehicle miles
but
traveled.
But there's also
yeah.
been this little thing floated that gas is already going to be $3.50 by this summer.
Well, and I guess someone told me that they were over – Gabe Gutierrez from KHOU, who mm-hmm. was over here at the Tribune offices yesterday,
yeah.
talked about having gone to see Tommy Williams, who was openly talking about that car tag thing.
Right.
You know, the idea of increasing the fee for car tags, which
yeah.
you told me was going to be some couple billion dollars over a period of time.
Yeah,
right?
It's, yeah. You know, it's a fee. It's not a tax.
Not
it's
a tax, a even you though know, people have to pay more this year than last year.
There's going to be all kinds of things that we don't call tax that somehow mm-hmm. produce money for the state here, you know.
Well, let's switch over to our final topic then on this revenue estimate.
Right.
Susan Combs is expected to come out on Monday to proclaim how much money we have.
Doesn't she know that there's other stuff happening Monday?
Yeah.
Maybe she does.
Maybe she does.
How to be below the fold by Susan Combs.
I think, you know, this is going to be one of those things where, you know, the state's newspapers that are covering politics and government are going to look at it and say, well, we have this really big government story. We have this really big political story. Which one's bigger? So while
this
the caucus is doing
this,
their
is
thing,
the day that Brett Favre takes the plea.
Right,
right, they,
right.
They hope,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it'll all get wiped out by you know some guy
some
in an Oldsmobile.
Some crazy thing. Right?
So she'll come out on Monday with a book of numbers that basically says this is what I, as the state's tax collector, think that we will bring in between August, well, actually September of 2011 and August of 2013. It's a little like palmistry. You know, throwing chicken bones or something. But that's the official number. She'll come in and say, this is how much money the state is going to bring in, cut to fit.
And we will therefore know on that day what the size of the shortfall
legislature
is.
Legislature, okay. unless three, no, it's four-fifths. Unless four-fifths of them decide to break the cap, the legislature has to write a balanced budget and fit the numbers that she's going to
no
bring in.
No chance of that happening, right?
I don't see anything that would give this, you know, four-fifths of this legislature.
More than a fifth of the legislature's Tea Party caucus.
Yeah, the idea that they should spend more money. So that's going to be the first number. So the first number is, here's how much money you have to spend. The mm-hmm. second number will be when the legislature comes in and says, this is what we think our minimum needs are for programs. The difference between those two things is going to be a shortfall. You're going to hear about six different shortfall numbers. Because one group is going to say, this is all government needs to do. Another group is going to say, no, they also need to do this. Another group is going to say, no, they need to provide current services. And they're all going to have, you know, different ideas of how big government should be and what the shortfall is. But the revenue estimate is the official number. And whether the controller's numbers are right or not, those are the official numbers. You've got to stick to those.
And then the Legislative Budget Board does a baseline budget about a week later. Is that right? Or two
they'll
weeks
do later? It. They'll do it. some point. I mean, they're not really on a deadline, but you know, sometime in January they'll pop out a baseline budget and we're off to the races.
Now, these estimates are rarely right on the money. I mean, they're a little bit off, right, historically?
They're always off. Okay. Sometimes they're way off. I mean, you know, if oil crashes in the mid-80s, you know, that one got revised downward a couple of times. The franchise tax numbers and the current revenue estimate were way off. Mm-hmm.
She comes out with a number, though. Is there any way for the people who are most optimistic about the shortfall, the $10 to $13 billion crowd, to declare victory, and for the people who are most pessimistic about the shortfall, the $25 to $28 billion crowd, also declare defeat, both credibly? Is there a way for them both to see in her number their own self-interest?
Yeah, because they'll have a different idea of how big the budget should be. And so if I say the budget's going to be $200 billion, then the shortfall is going to be $30. If you say the budget should be $190 billion, then it's going to be 20. See what I'm saying? I mean, it's just what you assume the state needs to spend. The other number to watch in a revenue estimate that's going to be really important as we go forward is she's going to estimate what the balance will be in the rainy day fund at the end of the current biennium. Mm. So when the legislature looks up and says, okay, so we need to spend X, whatever they decide X is, how are we going to get the money to do that? This taxes will produce this. Okay, we're short by this amount. How big is the rainy day fund? Oil and gas has been doing great. That's what fills the rainy day fund. And mm-hmm. So what originally looked like it might be like an $8 billion fund might be as fat as $10
billion. Yeah,
so,
she said in October, late October, I heard her say 8.2 she expected would be the size by the end of the biennium.
Dewhurst and his guys are saying 10. So that's a number to watch.
Hmm. Well, that'd be nice. It ties back to the Texas Forward thing, right? If the rainy day fund is bigger, then it actually solves the problem even more.
Except that no one in the Republican leadership has said that they're willing to even consider more than half of the rainy day fund.
And they need a two-thirds vote of both houses, of both the House and the Senate. Right.
So, you know, I mean, 10 would be great because then you would have $5 billion instead of $4 billion that might be able to be spent. But at the moment, none of the Republicans seem interested in draining it at all.
Right. So we'll have plenty to talk about next week. Tune in. Come back and listen to us. For now, if you have any questions or comments for the podcast, you can email us at podcasts@texastribune.org. On behalf of Evan, Ross, Ben, podcast producer Todd, I'm Elise. Thanks for listening.